You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. In a Christian church in Echo Park, volunteers are mopping floors and moving furniture and painting the walls of two community rooms. They're turning this space into a temporary shelter. It's for asylum seekers who the state of Texas put on buses to come to LA.
We're just trying to prepare this place to be as nice as possible to welcome migrants with humanity and compassion.
Guillermo Torres coordinates a mix of faith-based institutions and immigrant support groups. They call themselves LA's Welcome Collective for Immigrants. The group came together in the summer of 2022 when Texas began sending those buses to sanctuary cities all over the U.S. Well, their members give asylum seekers who arrive at Union Station a warm welcome.
In the form of a meal, of hygiene, of health checks, case management, transportation, coordination, logistics to their sponsors.
It's often the first time after a long journey the new arrivals feel a sense of ease. But what happens next? Reporter Kirsten Zilm has more.
So we'll clean them really good with a rag of water. And then we.
The first needs most immigrants have when they arrive are just a comfortable place to rest and a meal to eat. That's what this church basement will soon provide.
The vision is to make sure that they feel welcome and they have what they need, yeah. They feel a safe space, they have a place to sleep, they have access to food, a little medicine cabinet, all those things will be here ready for them, yeah.
Edna Horiyoshi is one of the volunteers and a member of Nikkei Progressives, a civil rights group based in Little Tokyo. When she heard stories about Texas busing asylum seekers to L.A., without any support for a new start on the West Coast, she felt heartbroken.
My grandparents were immigrants too, so I thought, what can I do to help? And so this seems like something I could do locally that would be helpful.
When Horiyoshi saw the church basement's dirty floors, patched up walls, and banged up furniture, she was slightly overwhelmed. But she started feeling better once she picked up tools and began working on the cabinets.
I'm doing something simple like removing the handles. So I can handle a screwdriver, so it's something I can do.
Next to her, Bailey Payne scrapes dust, dirt, tape, and old paint from the wall. She moved from Texas to Los Angeles a year ago and feels for the immigrants who go on the same trip, filled with so much more uncertainty than she did.
I've made that drive from Texas to California, but I got to stop like two nights and I got to eat along the way and to be on a bus for that ride through nothing is pretty brutal.
Bailey showed up for this event partly because she's embarrassed by her home state's immigration politics.
Coming from Texas, wanted to jump in to rewrite a narrative.
She disagrees with Governor Greg Abbott's claim that Texas is overrun by illegal border crossers and can't provide more shelter.
I don't like the idea that we don't have enough space or enough room or capacity to welcome and show hospitality. I think there's plenty of room and resources to share.
So we're wondering about putting showers. We know we probably need that.
In the church basement's bathroom, Pastor Frank Wolf discusses how to add showers to the facility with a contractor who also volunteers his work. The pastor drives to Union Station when a bus with immigrants from Texas arrives. He makes sure to wear his black clergy shirt with a white collar. The outfit helps to calm the immigrants down, he says, as do his words of welcome, spoken in Spanish and in English.
As soon as the door opens, one of the clergy people there goes on the bus. And we say to the people, Buenos dias, bienvenidos a Los Angeles. Welcome to Los Angeles, good morning. We also say to them, you're no longer detained. Ustedes no están detenidos. Those are the first words out of our mouths.
One of the families that heard those words from Pastor Frank were Vera Lee and her two daughters, 2 and 3 years old. It was a difficult decision to go to the United States, Vera Lee says, because she didn't know anybody here. We're using her middle name because the single mother fled from an abusive husband and poverty in Honduras. It took the family almost a year to get to Texas. After crossing the border, her situation became desperate fast. Without shelter and a job, the family ran out of money and food. Then, in July, Vera Lee heard about free bus rides for asylum seekers to places all around the United States.
Es un bus que le regala el transporte a personas que tienen su destino fijo.
Texas pays a private bus company for the transportation service. So far, the state has spent more than $75 million in tax dollars to send immigrants on trips to Washington, D.C., New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, Denver, and Los Angeles. Texas says it's up to the receiving cities to take care of the immigrants because they call themselves sanctuary cities. To Vera Lee, it seemed things could only be better in California. But the bus ride from Brownsville, Texas to L.A. took about 24 hours, with only two breaks in between.
Solo hubo dos paradas nomás. Uno para restroom y next foot.
The first time to use the bathrooms, the second time to get something to eat. Vera Lee says the welcome in Los Angeles was 1,000 times better than she expected.
Mil veces mejor. Yo no esperaba una bienvenida de esta manera. Yo no esperaba tener dormir en la cama.
She says she didn't expect so much help. The Welcome Coalition found refuge for the family in a Presbyterian church close to downtown L.A. The family has been there since July. They have a room with a bed, a fridge, and a cooktop. After her previous experiences on the journey from Honduras to Texas, Vera Lee did not expect that strangers would treat her so well, she says.
Personas que a pesar de no conocerme, pues me han tratado bonito.
Most of the asylum seekers move on within 72 hours to live with sponsors. Vera Lee, who has no friends or relatives in this country, would like to stay in Los Angeles. The Welcome Collective is giving her legal support. They arrange daycare for her kids and help with her search for a job and housing. The coalition gets financial help from the city and the county of Los Angeles. For the most part, though, they rely on donations. Since June, almost 1,000 immigrants have arrived from Texas in 27 buses. The need for temporary shelters is great. At the Echo Park Church, volunteers have started painting. Forest green for the trims, white for the walls. They want to have the basement ready for guests in the next few weeks. Even though there's still a lot left to be done to transform this into the space he envisions, Pastor Frank looks very happy.
It just gives me joy to see all of these people gathered together to do this work and to make this into a safe and comfortable and a homey place for folks that we don't know yet, but we will know.
It's just a temporary refuge, but the place and the people in it will surely make them feel welcome. For KCRW, I'm Kerstin Sim.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Stained glass is a centuries-old craft often associated with historic churches or a vintage Tiffany lamp. But at Judson Studios, a tiny family-owned glass business in Highland Park, it is a craft that's still alive and very much well. For more than a century, it's been shipping its renowned works far and wide, preserving stained glass-making traditions that are increasingly obscure in the modern era. But a few years back, they took on a Herculean task to create the largest stained glass window in the world. Tim Carey is the stained glass artist who spearheaded the effort to create that window. Hi, Tim.
Hi there. How are you?
Doing well. And all of this, by the way, is chronicled in the documentary Holy Frit, which is screening at the Lemley North Hollywood starting this Friday. And the film's director, Justin Monroe, is also with us. Justin, welcome.
How's it going, Steve?
We're good. We are good. So, Tim, you were Judson's lead artist and project designer while filming the documentary. How did this opportunity come, and why did you decide to take it on?
Well, man, we got a phone call one day just out of the blue, and I happened to be the one who picked up the phone that day. And on the other end was a guy who said, well, we're building this huge church in Leawood, Kansas, and we need a window that's the size of an NBA basketball court.
Wow.
And that started off the crazy process. That was a sort of frenzied effort to do something spectacular. And what ended up happening was I designed something that was very difficult, if not impossible, to do with traditional stained glass methods. So that's sort of what set the whole thing off on the wild ride that we went on.
Justin, how'd you meet Tim, and why'd you think this project was worth making a documentary over?
Well, crazy enough, man, I moved next door to Tim Carey and did not know him.
And, he's your next door neighbor.
Yeah, he was my next door neighbor. I moved from Oklahoma to South Pasadena. I'd lived in LA before, but we were moving back, and you know, just over beers and chatting as neighbors, we found out what each other did. And he said, look, man, my company is bidding for this biggest window in the world, and we need to look cool. Would you mind filming a little promo to go with our pitch? And I said, sure, sure, I'll come down and do it. And as I heard more and more about the project, I just asked him and David, his boss, I said, please tell me someone is documenting this process right now. And they said, no, why would anyone do that? And I said, because this, if you get this, if you win this bid, you're going to want this moment. And they said, oh, okay, that's interesting. And I said, and why don't you let that person be me?
Tim, the size notwithstanding, I mean, obviously you didn't know how to achieve the kind of look, right, that was needed for this giant church, right, in this giant window. And I want to play a clip of you explaining why.
So here's why my design is impossible to do with traditional stained glass techniques. Stained glass, for the last 1,000 years, has been a mosaic of individual colors bound by strips of lead. And within each piece, there's only one color. You can't combine different colors of glass without separating them with the lead. But my design demands combining lots of colors within each piece of glass. And you just can't do that.
Why in the world did you create a design that you didn't know how to execute?
Okay, that's a great question. I mean, that is the question. Well, like I said, we were bidding against big companies from around the world. I mean, some super amazing contemporary European glass studios that do amazing things with glass and color. And so we were the sort of like traditional studio. We were, you know, the mom and pop shop, you know, in this little town of Los Angeles now. We were sort of the underdog here. And so our work is traditional and sort of, it's leaded. It's got this sort of traditional look to it. And the Germans and the Italians were doing these big colorful things with acid etching and these contemporary glass techniques. So I said, we have to lean that direction. And so I started incorporating all these colors into my stained glass design. The truth really is that I didn't really care at that moment. I just was so locked in on getting this job. I like to say that it's kind of like, you know, Jurassic Park. They didn't know how to make the dinosaurs, but they still wrote the script and started making the movie. That's kind of how a lot of great art, in my opinion, gets made. Now, I didn't know that it was going to turn into what it turned into with Narcissus and Fusing, but I knew that
Let's bring in Narcissus, who's the renowned stained glass artist that you brought in to help pull this off, creating, you know, this technique of fusing glass together in a kiln. But the work wasn't always smooth sailing, right? I mean, there were a lot of moments during the film when you and Narcissus, this artist, were at odds. Let's hear this.
There is all of these moves that you have to get acquainted with. And I know what the moves are. They are not an infinite number of moves.
I've got moves, I'll tell you.
Yes.
You haven't seen my moves yet.
And I feel responsible for the fact that this piece has to be a masterpiece.
I have to make sure it's a masterpiece. I this, I that, everything is like, it's suddenly like he's the one who we're all trying to please.
All right, tension. right? This is like a reality show on TLC.
Well, I mean, the crazy thing is that Justin was there that whole time. Usually when things like this happen, at least in movies that I've seen, we're all talking about what happened. But he would have the cameras on, and it got to a point where we forgot about him. And I think a lot of the really good stuff in the movie came out at that point because he was just embedded. But yeah, Narcissus was this incredible paradox. He was this amazing, brilliant artist with a big ego, let's just be honest. And he deserves to have a big ego considering what he's done. But there were so many incredible moments of him allowing me into his process. And then also just coaching me on having the right attitude. Because as you can see in the movie, I oftentimes am flippant about a lot of things. So he taught me to be serious. He taught me to be accountable. And he taught me how to approach a major project that I had never done anything like before.
Justin, you were filming for years, right? We're not talking just a short period of time.
No, I filmed, I think when it was all said and done, I filmed about 3.5 years.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was crazy. And then, of course, you know, the post-production process took another 3.5 years and the festival. So it's been a 9-year process to be where we are right now.
That's amazing. I mean, the window did get made, by the way. Spoiler alert. What was it like for both of you seeing it finished for the first time in its home in Kansas City?
You know, for me, I mean, I'm making the documentary. I'm filming the story as it's happening, and I can't change the way they do anything. I can't affect the way that they make their artwork. But behind the scenes, I'm freaking out when it's falling apart. It doesn't look like it's going to happen. I'm feeling it all because I do want them to succeed. I don't want to tell, you know, a story about something that almost happened. And so to see that first center section installed, I mean, honestly, man, it brought tears to my eyes because we didn't know what it was going to look like when they got it up. Did they get the perspective right from the ground? It was such a huge thing. And to see it, it actually broke my heart in such a beautiful way. And then to see the people see it was just incredible.
My perspective was walking in for seeing it for the first time was relief. You know, that's what I felt as the one responsible for making sure, as Narcissus says in the movie, that I don't do something that stands for 500 years that sucks. And so I walked in and saw it and I said, oh, it doesn't suck. Okay, good. And that's how I felt. And then as an artist, I'm analyzing, this is a little delight. This is a little dark. Is this good? But overall, I was just so relieved that we had made all these decisions and they were working. And so that's the overwhelming feeling that I had.
Well, you can see this giant window that doesn't suck at its home in Kansas City and learn more about how all this was made and came together right here in Los Angeles, California. Holy Frit at the Lemley NoHo starting this Friday for a week. Tim Carey, Justin Monroe, congratulations to you both on both your works.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having us, man.
This is Greater LA from KCRW. Before you leave us today, a little ditty about cats. Ever heard the term herding cats? It's used as an example of the futility of trying to get everyone together. Because a cat marches to the beat of its own drum. You can't tell a cat what to do, much less put a leash on it and take it on a walk. But that's just what LA Times writer Lila Seidman did and continues to do, and she's here to talk about this growing walking your cat trend. Lila, welcome to you.
Steve, it's a pleasure to be here.
You have a Persian pussycat named Orson.
I do. He's right here.
When did you first decide that you wanted to try taking him out for a hike?
So even before I took him home, I wanted to try to walk him. I knew I wanted a cat, and I thought, you know, I might give this walking thing a try.
I mean, it's not a foreign idea, right? I mean, you have a pet, and sometimes you want to take the pet with you. And a lot of people take pets, like in a carrier or in the car with them or something like that. But walking a cat is something different because, as I mentioned, the cat marches to the beat of its own drum.
Yeah, and that's still the case with walking many cats. You know, people might see very, very athletic or adventurous cats on Instagram or TikTok and think, okay, my cat is going to be crushing miles with me on Runyon. And that is probably not going to be the case. My cat likes to be on a harness walking, but he kind of meanders and I follow.
And by the way, there are some cats that don't like to be tethered at all, and they'll freak out, right?
That's true. My cat took to it right away. It was just his ticket to the big wild world, and he loved it immediately. But many cats do not. So I spoke to some cat experts who said, you know, you need to seek consent to put the harness on the cat. See and check in with the cat how they're doing and responding to it. Cats actually can be trained, contrary to popular belief that you mentioned in the beginning of this conversation, but not all cats will come around. And all the cat experts I talked to told me you do need to respect that if that's the case.
Tell us about a typical hike when you take Orson out.
I've been walking him around the neighborhood for about a year. Then he always tries to sniff other people's porches and, you know, generally be a curious cat. But recently we actually went on our first hike. I took him somewhere very, very quiet and isolated. I strategically did that because I wanted him to have this experience where he could just explore the trail and, you know, not run into, for example, dogs or other people or bikes, you know. So I know that he can get a little bit startled, and so I made the decision to take him somewhere quiet.
And let's just say that cats can get really rambunctious if they're freaked out, scared, angry.
That is true. And, you know, of course, there are horror stories where the cat slips out of their harness. And that's why this should be done slowly, so that you know how your cat responds to certain situations. Like, I know if my cat hears a car, he's probably going to be startled. So I already know that from just being right outside my front door. He can come back to the porch and everything is fine. And that also helps you learn how the equipment works. If he can get out of his harness in the house, then you do not want to take the cat outside. You know, you need to troubleshoot all these things and really be sensitive to how your cat is responding. And one cat expert I talked to, she said she really discourages people from doing this. The only exception she'll make is if she sees an owner that has a really good bond with their cat and is really paying attention to those signals.
Have you been getting any blowback from anyone saying, why are you putting this out there? Because this is weird.
Well, I didn't realize that there was such a heated debate about this in the cat behaviorist community. So I reached out to people to get their tips. And then I learned through conversations that it's not a settled matter whether this is considered good for cats or not. It's split down the middle. Some people think this is a great way to get your cat out into the wild in a safer way than just letting them run free. I spoke to kind of celebrity cat behaviorist Jackson Galaxy, who held that position. But then a local trainer, Hannah McCoy, told me that, no, it's way too dangerous in LA. I mean, there's unleashed dogs that can come running. So I definitely have gotten some not great responses, but it's an ongoing conversation.
But you're going to keep walking Orson.
I'm doing it with precautions, but he really likes walking, Steve. He meows at the door. He complains when he can't go out. I don't feel that I'm forcing him to go. I feel he's often pushing me to go.
Ask your veterinarian if walking is right for you.
Veterinarians, you know, the one, you can't say they're an outdoor cat. Like, that is, like, enraging to a lot of cat professionals and experts.
Oh, you mean leaving them outside without a leash, right? Letting them come and go at will. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Lila Seidman, West Coast Experiences reporter for the LA Times. And certainly this is an experience. Lila, thanks.
Thanks so much.
That's going to do it for us this evening as we claw our way out of the show. Whew. Tomorrow, an update on the strikes. How close or maybe far apart is a deal between SAG-AFTRA and the big Hollywood studios? An update tomorrow on GLA. And guess who joins us tomorrow? Blackie Parrish from General Hospital. Actor John Stamos. He stops by to talk about his new memoir and a lot of personal moments on and off the screen right here in Hollywood. That's tomorrow on GLA. Always online, by the way, kcrw.com/GLA. How you doing? Maybe you have a story idea for us. Want to get the podcast? You can do that there as well, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search KCRW Greater LA or on the website, kcrw.com/GLA. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthew, Kelsey Gante, Eddie Sun, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Evan Ray, and Christian Bordahl all helped run the episode this evening. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for the time and the ear. Have a great night.